translation from verses 137 all the way through to 150. So all around, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees performed congregational chanting. The Lord, just like a maddened lion, danced in the middle. As usual, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced, there were perspiration, trembling, fading, tears, jubilation, and roaring. Indeed, the tears from his eyes washed his body and those before him. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu washed the bodies of all the devotees with the tears from his eyes. The tears poured like rains in the month of Shravana. The sky was filled with the great and loud chanting of Sankirtan, and the earth shook from the jumping and dancing of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always liked the loud chanting of Swarup Damodar. Therefore, when Swarup Damodar sang, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced and jumped high in jubilation. The Lord thus chanted and danced for some time. Finally, understanding the circumstances, he stopped. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then ordered Sri Gopal, the son of Advaita Acharya, to dance. While dancing in ecstatic love, Sri Gopal fainted and fell to the ground unconscious. When Sri Gopal fainted, Advaita Acharya hastily took him upon his lap. Seeing that he was not breathing, he became very agitated. Advaita Acharya and others began to chant the holy name of Lord Nrisimha and sprinkle water. The roar of the chanting was so great that it seemed to shake the entire universe. Does Harinam feel like that, right? When the boy did not regain consciousness after some time, Advaita Acharya and the other devotees began to cry. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu placed his hand on the chest of Sri Gopal and said loudly, "Gopal, stand up!" As soon as Gopal heard the voice of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately came to his senses. All the devotees then began to dance, chanting the holy name of Hari. This incident has been described in detail by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Therefore, I have described it only in brief. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a matter of etiquette. If a previous acharya has already written about something, there is no need to repeat it for personal sense gratification or to outdo the previous acharya. Unless there is some definite improvement, one should not repeat. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gatamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatapada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagna Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Drishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I'm just going to just repeat the verse and the purport because they are so short. This incident has been described in detail by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Therefore, I have described it only in brief. Srila Prabhupada says this is a matter of etiquette. If a previous acharya has already written about something, there is no need to repeat it for personal sense gratification or to outdo the previous acharya. Unless there is some definite improvement, one should not repeat. Well, I thought before we get into the knotty question, possibly of repeating or not repeating Shastra, I thought we could maybe share a few things about Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur and who he is in the context of our heritage, our disciplic succession, who he is in terms of relation to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who is the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's really important, the more I read, I realize the more I practice, it's really important for us to understand who's writing, where they're coming from, what the context is, why they're writing. Even when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, when he opens the Charitamrita, he actually explains why he's writing. And he speaks about Vrindavan Das Thakur and glorifies him in the Adi Leela, in the Madhya Leela, and also in the Antya Leela. He brings him up repeatedly. And one of the reasons is because Vrindavan Das Thakur wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it was originally known as Chaitanya Mangal, but because Lochan Das Thakur later on wrote another book called Chaitanya Mangal, so then contemporaries at that time decided to name Vrindavan Das Thakur's biography of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, actually primarily Lord Chaitanya, Chaitanya Bhagavat, so that there was a distinction. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he explains in the Adi Leela that the reason he writes the Chaitanya Charitamrita, although it's many years later and he's much older, is because he has been instructed to, but also Chaitanya Bhagavat, the Vrindavan Das Thakur's biography of Lord Chaitanya, stops really towards like the equivalent of the latter part of, or actually middle to latter part of the Madhya Leela, so the intermediate section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what we get from kind of the latter parts of Madhya Leela and the Antya Leela from Krishna Kaviraj Goswami is not discussed in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Also, Chaitanya Bhagavat's writing style is very different. Has anybody here read Chaitanya Bhagavat? If you read Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita and do a comparison in terms of the literary style and the content, the literary style of Chaitanya Bhagavat is very descriptive, narrative, emotive, but with little theology and philosophy. It is a biography. It doesn't try to explain too much about why what's going on is going on, but what's actually going on. So one gets more detail, like in this verse, this particular pastime with Gopal, you know, the details of what was going on in that pastime in terms of the description, because they've already been described. So Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, well, actually, you know, this has been given in detail, so I won't speak on this description any further. I don't want to break this etiquette. Someone is senior to me and they've already written about this. So this is stylistically different. Whereas if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a very systematic description of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes in a way that not just is chronological in terms of his activities, but chronological in terms of the tattva unfolding. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the Adi Lila, it's really important, the Adi Lila. You know, our books, they are written in the way they're written for a reason. The Adi Lila is really important to read because there he establishes so many different things. He establishes Vishnu Tattva, he establishes Guru Tattva, he establishes Jiva Tattva, and he establishes the Pancha Tattva, most importantly, in the context of Jiva, Vishnu, Guru Tattva. So really important for us to read these books. Coming and hearing classes is wonderful. We want to hear, we want to be in the association of devotees, but doing our own reading is essential, because when we hear in class, we generally, and this is desirable, when we hear in class, we accept, right? We accept the person who's speaking, is practicing what they preached, they're reading themselves, they're learning, and we rely on them to have already distilled something and share it with us. The thing is, the mind needs, unfortunately that our minds aren't always on our side. For a big part of our spiritual practice, especially when we are very much at the Vaidhi Bhakti stage, and mind is not so in control, it's not so regulated, it's not so much our friend, it's not yet become our student, so it's not such a good student. There's still a lot of blocks, a lot of unwanted things. And so there needs to be our own personal study and scrutinizing study of Shastra, so that our own intelligence is equipped to have the argument and dialogue within. We're all used to this. All of us, we have an internal dialogue, right? We have the background music of our internal dialogue, chatter, that we just accept as fact. And that's the lens through which we see the world. We can change that chatter, but to change that chatter, we have to incorporate new ideas, absolute truth, right? Especially where we have irrational or relative truths, we need the absolute truth. So where we are trying to get out of and break free from living in relative realities, because relative realities swing us from pillar to post, and this is what causes happiness and distress. We're trying to disentangle ourselves from that and try and see life through absolute reality. So it's important that our own study is done. So coming back to Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, he was born in 1507, according to our calendar. And he was born approximately 4 years after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. Now, he is the son of Narayani. Again, I'm going to give you a little bit of just description. So in Panchatattva, we have Srivas Thakur. His niece is Narayani. And when Narayani was very small, there's this pastime of Lord Chaitanya. He has many pastimes at Srivas Thakur's house. And many of these, he's in ecstasy. He's really, really absorbed in his meditations. And when he's absorbed, he's also honoring prasadam. And there's this one very particular pastime at Srivas Thakur's house where he comes running in, you know, declaring, "I am him, I am him." Now, Lord Chaitanya doesn't reveal himself as Radha and Krishna to very many people at all, just less than a handful. But he's coming to Srivas and saying, "I am him, I am him, I am him." And he's maddened in these ecstasies, and he's describing how if he doesn't, you know, give the message, if people don't accept him, if they don't accept him, then they won't turn to Krishna. So in these mad ecstasies, he's also honoring prasadam. Then little Narayani, you know, she would get the remnants of Lord Chaitanya's Mahaprasad. And so this very same Narayani, you know, she was also ordered at that similar time by Lord Chaitanya to chant in ecstasy, and empowered by him to chant in ecstasy. Actually, our chanting is not really a result of our endeavor. Our endeavor is an expression to Krishna that I want to be able to call you. Please let me call you. And so really it was by Lord Chaitanya's invitation and empowerment that Narayani, that's a four-year-old child, a child, you know, a female body, not initiated, not shastric, none of the things you would ordinarily say, you know, this is what would cause ecstatic symptoms. But because Lord Chaitanya says chant and dance in ecstasy, she was falling on the ground just by uttering the holy name once. And so this same Narayani, she got married. And Vrindavan Das Thakur was her son. And she, unfortunately, his father, she was widowed whilst he was in her womb. So he never knew his father. And we don't know much about his paternal lineage. So, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura says, because it's not relevant. Whereas the mother's lineage is very relevant in this case. So she returns after she has Vrindavan Das Thakur back to Mamgachi. I think she's with... he's born in Mamgachi and then she returns to... I think there's some confusion around, there's two villages named. But she actually returns to Srivas Thakura's house, and that's where she's taken care of after the passing of her husband. Now, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Thakur, he also writes the Gaura Ganadesh Dipika. So Gaura Ganadesh Dipika is like a supplementary literature. It allows us to understand who these saintly personalities are in Krishna's eternal pastimes. Okay, so whenever Krishna comes, he comes with his entourage. And just like Krishna comes in his many other avatars, the entourage also become part of that lila and adopt different names, different appearances, without losing who they are and without losing their relationship with Krishna. So it's not forgetfulness like our forgetfulness. We forget who we are, full stop. Okay, they don't forget who they are in relation to the Lord. They have that deep love for him. But it's expressed differently and in different dynamics. So this Gaura Ganadesh Dipika is a very important text as well if we want to understand fully. But we don't have to read it separately actually, because Srila Prabhupada, he draws on the Gaura Ganadesh Dipika periodically in his purports explaining who various people are. So Narayani is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Chaitanya Lila, she is the niece of Srivas. But in Krishna Lila, her name is Klimbika. She is the younger sister of one of Krishna's nurses, Ambika. And actually, even in Krishna Lila, she would eat Krishna's remnants. So this continues even in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, Vrindavan Das Thakur is extremely special. He is described as the incarnation of Vedavyas. He's known to be the incarnation of Vedavyas. I mean, how wonderful. So Vedavyas is... as we know, the author of the Vedas and the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the cream of the condensed milk and actually the essence and the purpose of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the most important question for anybody who is looking to revive their original identity and consciousness. And that question is put by Parikshit Maharishi to Sukadev Goswami, who then repeats what he's learned from his father, Vedavyas. He asks him, what is the best thing for everyone in all times and all circumstances, at all places? What is the best thing for everyone to do? Especially for one who is about to die, because Parikshit Maharishi is about to leave his body in 7 days. So this very same Vedavyas, who's written Srimad Bhagavatam, has come as Vrindavan Das Thakur. Now, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he is a disciple of Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami is one of the close associates of Lord Chaitanya. And he's also a close associate of Swarup Damodar Goswami. So Krishna Das Kaviraj Thakur is coming through that side. Vrindavan Das Thakur is a disciple of Lord Nityananda. In fact, he described how he is actually probably the last disciple of Lord Nityananda. And he was initiated at age 16 years old. Now, there's one town, and this is where actually Vrindavan Das Thakur is known to have lived out his life. We can still visit it, known as Denpur. When Lord Nityananda came to Denpur to visit Vrindavan Das Thakur, there's this very sweet pastime. Lord Nityananda, you know, he comes with his followers. They're in Kirtan, they're in Harinam, they're preaching the glories of the Lord. And there is this, they're invited to have prasadam. But because the home is too small, he says, no, actually just bring us some lentils and some rice and we'll cook here and we'll, just where we're sitting outside, we'll eat. Now, is it the amalaki fruit, I think? After he'd finished eating, he asked for this fruit because it refreshes the palate. It's a cleanser. And Vrindavan Das Thakur, he immediately produced this fruit. And he says, oh, I have it ready for you. Here you go. And he says, where did you get it from so quickly? And he said, oh, I collected it earlier and I saved it for you. Very enthusiastically like this. And actually, Lord Nityananda chastised him. He chastised him and he says, what are you doing? You're not supposed to hoard and collect. You know, we should only take when we need things. This is not a good mentality. So you can't come with us now as we proceed with our Harinam and pilgrimage and tour. He said, I want you to stay here. And actually describes how this pastime was a blessing. See, every chastisement is really, it's another vehicle for a blessing. And it's on this, it's at this time that he orders Vrindavan Das Thakur that you stay here, I want you to write. I want you to write, I want you to preach the glories of Lord Chaitanya. And it's on this instruction that Vrindavan Das Thakur, he writes the Chaitanya Bhagavat. He lives out his days in Dhanpur, and he never gets to meet Lord Chaitanya. He has association of Lord Nityananda, but he doesn't get to meet Lord Chaitanya. He also has the association of Janavadevi, who is the eternal consort of Lord Nityananda. So it's Vrindavan Das Thakur, he's also written Nityananda Charitamrita. The other thing you'll notice about Chaitanya Bhagavat is that there are far more mentions of Lord Nityananda in all of the pastimes, which stands to reason because he's a disciple of Lord Nityananda. He's had association of Lord Nityananda, so his heart is naturally going to want to describe this. So why do we want to know a little bit more about Vrindavan Das Thakur? It's very important for this purport. You know, in this purport, it's very specific. Prabhupada's majority of his teachings, he's telling us, share Krishna consciousness, repeat what you hear, share it, give it to everybody, preach it with intelligence, give your realization, give it according to time, place and circumstance. And here he's very specifically saying, this is a matter of etiquette. Okay, this is a matter of etiquette. So it is important for us in this context to understand why. Why specifically with Vrindavan Das Thakur is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami saying, I'm not going to speak about this anymore. Okay, he's already talked about it. I'm not going to speak about this anymore. So I want to, and actually he explains this in verses 33 to 48 in the Adi Lila in the 8th chapter. And I wanted, the reason I want to read these verses, the verses are very short, so please, you don't have to, you know, sometimes people find it hard to concentrate when somebody's just reading something, but this is very short. I just want you to hear these words directly from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So actually in 32 he opens with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, is greatly magnanimous. Unless one worships him, one can never be liberated. O fools, just read Sri Chaitanya Mangal, Chaitanya Bhagavat. By reading this book, you can understand all the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Vyasadeva has compiled all the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam, Thakur Vrindavan Das has depicted the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Thakur Vrindavan Das has composed Sri Chaitanya Mangal. Hearing this book annihilates all misfortune. By reading Sri Chaitanya Mangal, one can understand all the glories and truths of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda and come to the ultimate conclusion of devotional service to Lord Krishna. In Sri Chaitanya Mangal, later known as Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has given the conclusion and essence of devotional service by quoting the authoritative statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. If even a great atheist hears Sri Chaitanya Mangal, he immediately becomes a great devotee. Sri Radha Gokul Nandaji ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gornita ki jai. The subject matter of this book is so sublime that it appears that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has personally spoken through the writings of Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur. I offer millions of obeisances unto the lotus feet of Vrindavan Das Thakur. No one else could write such a wonderful book for the deliverance of all fallen souls. Narayani eternally eats the remnants of the food of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Vrindavan Thus, Thakur was born of her womb. What a wonderful description he has given of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Anyone in the three worlds who hears it is purified. I fervently appeal to everyone to adopt the method of devotional service given by Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda and thus be freed from the miseries of material existence and ultimately achieve the loving service of the Lord. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has written Sri Chaitanya Mangal and therein described in all respects the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. He first summarized all the pastimes of the Lord and later described them vividly in detail. The pastimes of Lord Chaitanya are unlimited and unfathomable. Therefore, in describing all those pastimes, the book became voluminous. He saw them to be so extensive that he later felt that some had not been properly described. He ecstatically described the pastimes of Lord Nityananda, but the later pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained untold. He then goes on to say the devotees of Vrindavan were all very anxious to hear those pastimes, and then goes on to speak a bit more about why he is writing and what he's going to write about. So in this context, understanding that he would not want to repeat something that is already written makes sense. First of all, even at that particular time, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur is his senior. Secondly, Vrindavan Das Thakur is Vedavyas himself. And thirdly, and this is what Srila Prabhupada points out to us in particular, even though, you know, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has an instruction to write, and there may even be some overlap. In this purport, Prabhupada says that if a previous acharya has already written about something, there's no need to repeat it. But he says, for personal sense gratification or to outdo the previous acharya. Unless there is some definite improvement, one should not repeat. So Srila Prabhupada's warning us. He gives us many reasons to preach. He gives us many reasons to repeat. But he is here being very clear that we must remember that even where we have permission, even where we have instruction to share, to repeat, much like we're doing now, right? So many devotees are going out distributing books, and some of distributing books requires sharing what's in the books. The books were written, after all, for devotees, then we distribute, right? Srila Prabhupada was very strong on this. Learn what's in the books and then share. Learn what's in the books, then distribute the books. So even where we have a strong instruction, excuse me. Even where we have a clear instruction, we must check our motivation. And, you know, this idea that we're doing it for personal sense gratification or to outdo the previous acharya. Most of the time when we hear that, most people are not going to resonate with that. Most people are going to say, I don't preach to outdo the previous acharyas. I don't preach for my own personal gratification. I do it because I've been instructed to. The one is not generally connecting with those motives, because those kinds of motives are very, very subtle. They're very subtle. They're not the kind of motives that are very obvious in our mind. They're not the kind of anartha that we are usually very cognizant of if they are present. These are the kind of motives that actually those who are very regularly preaching, thank you so much, writing, sharing, they're more likely to, as part of their purification, have revealed to them or encounter. Because it is very satisfying on a spiritual level, but also a human level. There are very many human benefits to sharing, you know, Krishna consciousness. And then there's also the mind and intelligence that can trip you up and make you think that because you have been allowed to do something, you may be able to do it better. So you may be hearing those things and thinking, well, I can't really relate. I don't get any personal gratification from it. In fact, maybe you find it difficult. Maybe it's an austerity. And maybe also thinking, well, how am I ever going to think I'm outdoing previous acharyas? They're so exalted and here's lowly me. But actually, you know, when we speak about our teachers, and this is something that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami points out when he's speaking about Guru Tattva in the Adi Lila, he describes the spiritual masters as our instructing spiritual masters as well as our initiating spiritual masters. Those instructing spiritual masters in particular, even more so than the initiating spiritual masters, are often people who are in our close proximity, right? And those can be the people that the mind quite easily goes, oh, I think I can explain this better than this person. So why I thought, let's just look at this point of why do we preach? Why was, despite the etiquette and us having to be careful about our motives for sharing, for repeating, for describing that which has already been described extensively by many, many people, why is it that we preach? Why do we share? What is the primary reason? The reason that Prabhupada talks about time and time again, more than any other reason that he repeats over and over again, the reason we repeat, the reason we share, is for our own purification. What does this mean? What does purification mean? Because you know when we hear about on my own purification, this word purification, we can hear it so many times that it starts to lose meaning. Right? When you hear a word over and over again, you almost disconnect from what that word means. This happens with every word. Even swearing. Some people swear so much, for them the word stops being swearing. You know? This is where I start sounding like an older person and I give away my age. It's now swearing in music is a normal thing. When I was growing up, it was known to be very explicit to swear in a song. Now it's lyrical, it's lyrical prowess, and swear words are seen as words that can be used as part of the poetry of musical expression. So they don't, and if you speak to young people or anybody who listens to music which is full of swear words, they will tell you, oh, it's just a word. It doesn't carry that same weight. So I'm giving this as an example, just as the same thing can happen with profound words as well. Purification is a very profound, profound thing. It carries deep meaning, especially in the context of Krishna consciousness and spiritual development. But when we hear it over and over and over and over and over again, we hear the word purification and it leads to nothing, or it may lead to nothing in the mind, because here's another word we've heard 1,000 times. So why do we preach for purification? What does that mean? What happens when we are sharing? What is actually happening if we break down? When we are sharing, and we could spend, again, all day talking about this. When we share a transcendental, okay, sound vibration, what does this mean? So that a transcendental sound vibration is a sound vibration which is either by nature directly from the spiritual dimension, like Krishna's name, right? Like the Maha Mantra. Or it is language used to describe the pastimes of the Lord or the process of devotional service, because that is a medium to achieving. So it becomes transcendental. Does that make sense? So what are we doing? We are uttering sound which looks like and sounds like it's of this world. I'm speaking English, right? We're reading English. We're reading Sanskrit. All sounds Bengali. All words black, you know, black ink on white paper. This is definitely in this material world. We're not in another dimension. But what we are doing in uttering what appears to be on the surface manifest, right? Prakrita, manifest sound vibration, also has another side to it, which is aprakrita, which is unmanifest. As in, it's not obvious. There's something behind it that is not obvious to our five working senses. Okay, that's not palpable. with these five working senses. And so what happens is, as we speak, as what we're saying, that sound vibration is leaving our mouth. Where's it also going? Yes, the sound vibration goes to everybody in front of us, but where is it going before it reaches anybody else? Who's the first person to hear what leaves your mouth? Yourself, right? We're the first person to hear what we say, because we're the closest to the instrument, right? Our ears right there. In fact, we don't realize how many things we're listening to. Right now, we're all sitting here. You're also listening to your own heartbeat. You're also listening to the blood flowing through your veins. You can hear it, but you're just not paying attention to it. When you lie down at night and you lie on your side and you're very quiet, I'm sure you can hear. Right? So we're listening to so many things. Now, when we utter transcendental sound vibration, it has this added benefit because it has this unmanifest quality of all above and beyond all other sound vibrations that we utter. Everything we say changes the mind, affects our mind, doesn't it? Right? Sound has this ability to literally change the mind. We can see that on a physiological level, biological level, on MRI scans. Even people who repeat positive affirmations, you'll see changes in their brain. Okay, because the literally the brain responds to the mind and the mind responds to the brain. It's like this very interconnected relationship. But what transcendental sound vibration does is not only does it change the mind, not only does it change the brain, not only does it change the body, but it quite literally reaches our actual self. This is what the aprakrita sound does. Aprakrita, it's not manifested these, but it actually reaches the aprakrita part of us, the unmanifest part of us. And in this way, it's purifying. In what sense? It blasts through the covering. This is what purification means, right? Purification means remove the stuff that I don't want. When you purify water, what does your water filter do? Now you get all sorts of fancy water filtration systems now. The 30-layer system, the 15-layer system, the 3-layer system. If you ever shopped for a water filter, it can be quite confusing because you're sitting there trying to figure out, well, why is the 30-layer one better than the 15-layer? And if you really get, I mean, there's a lot of things that can distract you in this world. You could spend a lot of time getting busy knowing things and detailed things about things that really, at the end of the day, aren't going to make that much difference. But they're important to the person who's either trying to sell it or who has done the research, right? But what are they ultimately trying to do? To try and, what's the best purifier? The one that removes everything right down to the finest impurity, that the things that your eyes couldn't see, the things that you can't taste in your water, the things that won't even damage you now, but we'll remove the things that will damage you if they accumulate in the next 10 years or 20 years. You know, even if you're about to leave your body in a year, drink this water that we're filtering for you, because it won't damage you now if you have those things, but it'll damage you in 20 years. But even if you're going to leave your body in 1 year, it doesn't matter. Just spend an extra £100 and have this filter. But this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm trying to explain, that the most potent purifier is this transcendental sound vibration, because it does. It removes things from our minds and hearts, anarthas, coverings, desires, affinities, aversions, that are down to such a microscopic level, we don't even know that they're there. We don't even know that they're there. And if we wait for them to sprout, it's going to be a long time. Right? How, when you look back in hindsight, how far can you go? When you look at your own foresight in terms of, you know, we're all different in terms of our foresight, how much further can I see? How far can you really go? When you have insight, how deep can we really go? It is a fact. None, our insight, our hindsight, and our foresight cannot go any further. Okay, can never go further than how far transcendental sound vibration can go. Cannot go any further than Krishna can go. Krishna has more hindsight, more foresight, and more insight about us than we will ever gain. Okay, and I'm sharing this also as somebody who works in the field of insight. 50% of my job is insight, right? Looking inwards, right? When we're looking at psychiatry, psychology, all the things of the mind, you're looking inwards, aren't you? I'm telling you, this is the thing. Krishna, this aprakrita, is reaching parts of us that even with the best hindsight, foresight, and insight are beyond our reach. So why do we preach? When we share, when transcendental sound vibration leaves our mouth, it enters our ear. On a physiological level, on a psychological level, on a physical level, on a neurological level, that sound vibration, like all sound vibrations, is making shifts. Furthermore, the unmanifest part of that sound is also making shifts. Whilst we are simultaneously being cleaned, we are also being woken up, and our original consciousness is being revived. So the primary reason why Prabhupada says time and time again, okay, even if you have a desire for personal sense gratification, even if you think you can speak this better than the person before you, actually, yes, it's a matter of etiquette. Don't do it only for these reasons. But if you do it because you want to purify yourself, then that's the best and most important reason to share. Right? We make so many excuses. I'm not a very good speaker. I don't know the philosophy very well. I'm not charming enough. People tend to ignore me when I open my mouth. The words come out muddled. I forget what I'm about to say. We make so many excuses, don't we? We make so many reasons. Because why? Because we are invested in, oh, I want people to like what I'm going to say. There's some personal sense of gratification there. It's already there in the reason why we won't do it, right? And sometimes we may hold back because we're distracted, because we're thinking, you know, actually I could explain that really well, but I don't want to come across like an expert. You know, I don't want my ego to get inflamed. What's Prabhupada saying? Don't only do it. He uses this word. There's no need to repeat it for personal sense gratification or to outdo the previous acharya unless there is some definite improvement one should not repeat. What's the improvement? What is the improvement that we are adding? The improvement we're adding is for ourselves. This is going to improve me. If I share, and this is for everything. It doesn't mean just giving class. Everything, whether you're preaching by wearing tilak, by wearing neck beads, you know, by telling someone your name, by distributing prasad, but just letting, you know, owning it that you are a spiritual person, not just a spiritual person, but a person who's sold out to spiritual personalism. And is a devotee of Srila Prabhupada and a devotee of Krishna. So this purification is so important. And remembering that the only reason I share and the primary reason I share is to purify myself, because Prabhupada has given us preaching as part of our sadhana bhakti. It's our sadhana. To share Krishna consciousness is our sadhana. The great empowerment comes, great strength comes to us when we share that which is good for all people at all times. It is good for all people at all times. And when we give up our hang-ups and we trust that it's good for all people at all times, then all of these obstacles that we have that block us from sharing, they will move out of the way. We also, of course, we share to give the message according to time, place and circumstance, to share our realization. But again, this is helping us. Because ultimately, when we share according to time, place and circumstance, that time, place and circumstance, we're also living in it. We're also battling with those same things that we're trying to help other people with, right? Often you'll see that, you know, when you share something, like, oh, I really needed to hear what I just spoke about. And sharing our realization. Sharing our realization is such a wonderful way for us to be of service to others, but also actually to unburden our hearts of the confusion that we have, and to get further clarification. When you're just talking, have you ever tried to sort out a conundrum in your own mind with a conversation in your own mind? Right, have you tried? You can go around in loops. The conversation can go on and on. You can come back to the same point over and over again. It's like having a conversation with somebody who literally doesn't want the conversation to conclude, okay? And doesn't want you to get anywhere good, anywhere fast, right? But when you start speaking those same things out loud, you take them outside of the body. Even if no one speaks back to you, somehow or another, speaking out loud makes the mind a little weaker and makes the intelligence a little sharper and gets you to be able to take a step back from your own thoughts and go, huh, that's That's how it works. You know, when I first I read this purport, even though it's so short, I think I must have read it about 6-7 times over the period of the last few weeks. I kept going back to it going, wow, hang on a minute. You know, I'm a preacher. I'm a teacher. A proper thing. If a previous acharya has already written about something, there's no need to repeat it for personal sense gratification or to outdo the previous acharya. Unless there is some definite improvement, one should not repeat it. Now, I personally am in a process of writing, and I have enough mental obstacles in that writing as there is. And so I come across this purport, I'm like, wow. Okay, you know, wow, now I'm being challenged. Why should I do this? Why should I do this? And, you know, one of my Shiksha gurus was very generous as I was sharing my doubts. You know, I just don't feel qualified to write. And then I'm reading things like this. And they said, we write because our only qualification is the instruction. And this is what Shri Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami shares with us in the Adi Leela, that Vrindavan Das Thakur, he was empowered by this instruction of Lord Nityananda. And because he followed that instruction, even those things that he didn't see himself, he didn't experience himself, he was able to write about. Now you look at Veda Vyasa's Srimad Bhagavatam. Those of you who've read Srimad Bhagavatam, those who are yet to read Srimad Bhagavatam, it's exciting. You know, it's exciting because in the Srimad Bhagavatam we have past, present and future. We have descriptions of things that go on in planetary systems where Vedavyasa isn't present. Why? Because he has long distance hindsight, deep insight and long distance foresight because he is empowered. His heart is completely open and trusting to the instruction of sharing. And same with Vrindavan Das Thakur. Even though he didn't observe many of these things himself, he wasn't there. But he had access into a realm, into pastimes, into personalities and their emotions, so much so that Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is saying, actually just by reading those books, just by hearing those narrations, your heart will not just become completely purified, but you will be jubilant, you will be ecstatic in your Krishna consciousness. Just by hearing it. Just by hearing it. Why? Because sound vibration has the manifest and unmanifest. Even if you look at material sound, there's four parts to sound, right? What you hear with your ears, what you feel, right? Sound has a physical presence, doesn't it? Everybody wants good bass in their car. You can hear a car with good bass driving past. It makes your windows shake in your house. Maybe you like it, maybe you find it disturbing, but it's definitely present. So sound can be felt. Okay. Sound evokes and has an emotion by nature, isn't it? Again, all these subtle things. And then there's the intention of the sound. There's the intention of the sound. So, you know, you'll see this with music, that certain music, it has a particular melody which is joyful, but the intention of the lyrics is melancholic. Right, so it can evoke both, the feelings can be evoked both by the intention and the, you know, sound itself. So with transcendental sound vibration, not only do we have all of this, but we have that underpinning transcendental aprakrita, which Srila Prabhupada explains is activated by the initiating and the instructing spiritual masters. We are given permission to access that. And that big permission, that significant permission, awakens in our heart to the degree that we accept it. How much do you believe? When I read it out, and Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, actually, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, if you hear Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, you will actually become enlivened and mad in ecstasy. You will want nothing but the holy name. How present were we? How immersed were we when we were hearing that? How much did we digest it? And if we didn't digest it, we didn't believe it, did we have a desire to immerse ourselves? You know, we often talk about this word present as well. It's something that, it's another P word that we hear a lot, but again, sometimes we become numb to it. What does it mean to be present? Do we use a mindfulness technique? Do we use a breathing technique? Being present is the beginning stage of being immersed. Have you ever immersed yourself in water? Immersing yourself underwater, you know, is not just a quick dunk underneath. Even if you're a bit scared of water, you can dunk yourself underneath. If you've ever been swimming, the water's cold, what do? You just dunk in quickly, get yourself used to it. But if you want to immerse yourself, it means you stay there, right? Stay there. When we are reading, even if we aren't ready to fully receive what we're hearing, we can desire to fully receive what we're hearing. What we hear and the impact that the aprakrita and the prakrita sound have on us has absolutely nothing to do with our intelligence. Absolutely zero. You could not even be able to really understand what you're reading. You may not even intellectually understand it. Maybe your IQ, maybe you have dyslexia. Maybe you have a very low IQ. You know, maybe you have someone who has a learning disability. Doesn't matter. It does not matter because Krishna does not require our intelligence to reach our heart. Krishna does not require our intelligence to reach our heart. So who are we to impose it on him, saying that I need to have intelligence to let you reach my heart? Does that make sense? So there are so many things that stop us from immersing and staying there, all these doubts. But do it anyway. You know why? Because just what we're saying and what we're hearing already, whether we believe it or not, is doing that cleaning. But if we receive it, it clears it quicker. Receiving means just even begins with the willingness to receive. You know, the willingness to receive. So in one sense, yes, it is a matter of etiquette. Who are we to repeat that which has already been written and spoken about by pure devotees, by those who are completely sold out to Guru, to Krishna? Who are we? You know, even if it is gratifying, even if we can, maybe even on an intellectual level, do a better job. Isn't this what academics try to pursue? I want to try a better way of explaining this. Who are we? We are the servants of Srila Prabhupada. We are part of Srila Prabhupada's army. And we have been instructed by our general to share. We've been instructed to share. So as you go out over the next few weeks, whether you are distributing books, whether you're cooking for those who are distributing books, whether you are driving the van, whether you are simply in awe of those who distribute books, whether you've decided that actually you will get a book set for yourself, or whether you've decided that the book marathon for you is a marathon in your own heart, that you are going to run and immerse yourself in the books. Remember, we are in Srila Prabhupada's army. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments? Govinda Prabhu.
Thank you. Here's a question for etiquette. So Lochan Das Thakur writes Chaitanya Mongol. He's a servant of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So why would Vrindavan Das Thakur's book be the one that changes its name to accommodate the new book rather than the new book change its name?
Yes. Yeah, it's a good question. The only explanation I could find was that the devotees at the time who were allowed to make that decision decided to change the title of Vrindavan Das Thakur's with no real detail. There's no real detail around the explanation as to why. And this is me just trying to intellectually, I'm not an academic studier of Shastra by any means. And I'm sure there's maybe someone out there who has a clearer, more factual answer. But my understanding, just from the whole idea of etiquette and logic, is that I think it's to do with the way Vrindavan Das Thakur has written the biography, the sections. Also, I think the meaning of the word Bhagavat is superior to Mangal. So it gives, it gives it more authority in one sense, right? Mangal means auspicious and Bhagavat is like supreme. So one is auspicious and one is supreme. And you have Charitamrita, which is the eternal nectar of the pastimes of the living force or Lord Chaitanya. So it's, I think based on my understanding and the lack of detail or lack of my research as well, I couldn't find anything. I also wondered why change, but I think it's something to do with that. Again, this is the whole idea of speaking out loud, that Bhagavat means something more superior than Mangal. So it could be that. That could be it. Because they're not going to call Lord Chandas Thakur as... He would object to it. He'd say, no, hang on, don't call my book the Bhagavat, then my spiritual master's just auspicious. But that's a good question on etika. Anyone else? I was just going to say on this subject of etika, Prabhupada, especially at his time, was seen as a maverick by some, because he broke lots of Vedic etiquette, right? Particularly around bringing more gender equality around the expression and practice of Krishna consciousness. But this was all authorized by Shastra. And this was all authorized by being part of Lord Chaitanya's movement and Lord Chaitanya's revival of, Krishna consciousness. So there's etiquette which is absolute and there's relative etiquette. So if we see breaking of etiquette, we have to see is the etiquette, why, first of all, what's the purpose for the etiquette being broken? And secondly, is this a relative etiquette or an absolute etiquette that's being broken? Prabhupada didn't break any absolute etiquettes. They were all secondary things and all to fulfill the instructions of his spiritual master. Is there anything from the ladies? Been all incredibly quiet. Any comments, any realizations? Anissa? Just take the mic so people online can hear.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Hare Krishna. So wonderful. It's more so a comment. I was reading from your Ever Well Wisher about Srila Prabhupada's biography, and just at the bit where he remembers his spiritual master's instruction to preach to the four walls. And I think personally I've just been feeling a bit insecure with the word preach, its connotations, and maybe not feeling like I'm at that level where I can be on the streets and distribute books. But I really love what you said about let the marathon go on in the heart. It's really inspired me to start with the four walls and see where it could take me organically. So maybe a question can be, how can we redefine preaching?
Yeah, it's nice. I like that. You're right. The word preach is, it's quite loaded, isn't it? I've noticed even in our community, we've started calling people speakers instead of preachers. Right? Almost like it's a, all right, well, is speaker, does it have a more positive, another P word, which is kind of, we've become numb to the meaning. There is a clear difference between a speaker and a preacher. Why shy away from it? A speaker can speak about anything. I'm a speaker about these four walls, but a preacher is somebody who's very specifically is delineating the science of God consciousness. Regardless of religion, if someone says, I'm a preacher, they're going to tell you something about God, right? They're going to tell you, someone says, I'm a speaker, well, you could be speaking about anything, right? But one of the reasons maybe we modify is because we are trying to navigate the hang-ups that the general population has about people who've spoken about God and who maybe have then exploited others in that context. But in terms of redefining preaching in a way that we can bypass or transform the way our mind has absorbed it based on social conditioning or even our own personal experience is when I look at the word preach, There's this word reach in it. When we preach, we are trying to reach. We are trying to reach deep into our own hearts. We're trying to reach the person that we are speaking to. But ultimately, we're also trying to reach out for Guru and Krishna. So we reach to Guru and Krishna. Okay, we reach to Guru and Krishna for their mercy. And we reach out to others to touch their hearts, to serve them. But we also reach in. We reach into our own hearts, really to see what can I offer? What can I really offer? And the P, for me, the P, and this I find very helpful, is we're reaching the person. We're reaching the person God, the person me, the real person me, and the person standing in front of me. So preach can be person reach. Reach the person. When we reach the person, then it's not really about technique. It's not really about presentation style. Right? Because all of us are like this. When somebody reaches us, the conditioning doesn't really, even if our lives are completely different to the other person, there's a connection that is inexplainable. Yeah, so you can think about it maybe that way. I don't know if that's helpful.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Prayojana Prabhu. Hare Krishna, could we give Prabhuji the mic, please?
Okay. Thanks. Nice verse in Nectar of Instruction. It'll give you all the information you need on this, actually. And it's text 3. It's a very positive look at it. And it says, Utahan nishchaya tatat par karma pravartanat sangha tiagat satoriti sadabir bhakti prasidyate. It says, there are 6 principles favorable for the execution of pure devotional service. What, number 1, being enthusiastic. 2, endeavoring with confidence. And then it says, and being patient. We got to be patient even with ourselves. And then it says here, and then it says, such as we follow the regulative principles such as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna. He's in charge. And abandoning the association of non-devotees, but following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. There are these 6 principles undoubtedly assure the complete success of pure devotional service. And there's one thing I can remember from Christianity. It says, let go, let God. It's a sutra. Let go, let God. Do it with confidence. Krishna's there. Because we should really trust in Krishna, providing our enthusiasm and a want to do for him, to please him. Okay. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. What is it?
Could you just explain a bit more about, you said that Srila Prabhupada broke some of the secondary etiquette for women? Could you explain that a bit more?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, traditionally, in the Vedic system, women are not allowed on the altar. Women would not be going out in the streets, sharing anything, let alone Krishna consciousness. They would generally be at home, caring for children, not in a, oh, you're locked up at home and you're imprisoned here, but in a very protected way. We protect things that are valuable. So children are valuable, women are valuable, Brahmins, everybody's valuable, but in Shastra it describes women, children, elderly and Brahmins. They have a lot of value in them because they are the seeds and progenitors of so many different things. That children are the future. Women are the, seeds of children. Like they give birth to children. Sorry, not the seeds. They're the womb for children. They nurture the children's first guru. women also provide a lot of shelter and protection for men from birth to death. They are the foundation of Grahastha Ashram, which is the protecting ashram for sannyasis, right? And a source of brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. And then you have, you know, the elderly. They give us so much wisdom. You know, they dedicate their life to sharing their wisdom. They're no longer wrapped up in kind of maintaining the body. And then we have the Brahmins, who are giving us the vision and direction on the best way to do everything, right? Especially the Vaishnav Brahmins. But all of these four categories of very valuable personalities in society and types of births in society are also very vulnerable because they're all very soft-hearted. They forgive easily, they trust easily, they don't put up very many barriers and walls, and so they can be exploited physically, psychologically, very easily. Not because of stupidity, but because of softness of heart. Children are soft in heart, women are soft in heart, Brahmins are soft in heart, elderly are soft in heart. So what's so valuable about them needs to be protected. So traditionally, this is why you wouldn't. So, but Prabhupada, he protected. This is what I mean. We're part of Prabhupada's army. He's protecting us. He says, okay, let's do away with these because everybody's trashed the way society runs anyway. So rather than waiting for society to catch up to be at a time which is optimum where everybody can behave in an etiquette-type manner and look after each other, let's just give everybody the best thing for all people at all times now through every way possible and make it available to everybody. And yeah, he was criticized a lot by people for doing things that were not Vedic, but they were Krishna conscious. And actually, if you look at Vedavyas, when he finishes writing the Vedas, he's not satisfied. It explains this very clearly, that he's dissatisfied after writing the Vedas. Now you're thinking, what? Dissatisfied after writing the Vedas? Why? Because he felt this internal thing that I haven't given the best thing, which is actually the purpose of writing about all of these wonderful things in this world, is actually really, if you don't understand Krishna, then what's the point of it all? And so when Narad Muni hears the calling of his disciple, right? When we have a question, the spiritual master comes externally and internally, and he, you know, they have this beautiful dialogue, and he says, you know, you need to write the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to the Vedas. The condensed milk is superior to milk. A teaspoon of condensed milk has much more milk than, like, I think it's like equivalent to like a liter, I don't know how much, but it's a lot. So this is like one word of, you know, Bhagavatam carries in it more than so many verses from the Vedas. So Srila Prabhupada's adjustments, there's many. I mean, I've just mentioned a few, but they're all in the pursuit of the essence and perfection. Prabhupada asked the same question to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about society when he was first instructed to give this message to the West. He said, well, hang on a minute, where India is behind the West, socially, politically, everything. Surely we should wait until our political position is stronger. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, there isn't time. There's no material situation that is perfect enough. This message is too important. So don't wait for that. Do this first. Right? And in an emergency situation, you have to go straight to the best thing. You don't wait for the situation to be optimum. You just do what you need to do. Right? So this is what Prabhupada did. He risked his life and he gave up his life for us. And he gave us everything. Everything we look, everything, literally everything. You read, you hear, the culture, the way the deities are worshipped, the way the temples are designed. It has Prabhupada's touch, because everybody who's done anything to build anything in ISKCON was personally trained by Srila Prabhupada. It's always come from somebody who is personally trained by Srila Prabhupada. So, yeah, he's all around us. And he's simply wonderful and perfect. And just read, if in this book, during this book marathon, you can't muster up the motivation to preach or share books, read about Srila Prabhupada. You read about Srila Prabhupada, you won't be able to help it but want to share his books. Even if the only book you want to share is his life story, even that is amazing. Yeah? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Okay, well, let's stop there. It's 9 o'clock, breakfast time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.